The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to the programme. This is The Weekly Connect, the show that is all about you if you live with sight loss. Coming up this week, we find out what it's like to be a visually impaired police officer. Yes. We also learn about another of your favourite sight loss societies. This time we travel to the north of England to learn about Galloway's and prepare for a taste of something different at a restaurant that teaches people what it's like to be blind. That's all coming up on this week's programme.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
But first this week, we begin where we left off last week with part one of Catherine Pugh's story, as told to our own Joe Barclay. Now, Catherine lost her vision in possibly the most unimaginable way, through a car crash, where she also suffered major burns. Catherine told Jill that she's tried to turn what happened to her into something positive, despite the challenges it brought.
I always tried to be positive, and in the beginning thought I was a burden to my family and things and friends and even a relationship, because one of my friends pulled me off the coach. He was the guy that actually saved my life, and I pushed him away because it hurt him to see me, you know, things like that. But now I try to be my best self, and if anything, I would say that what's happened to me has probably made me not a nicer person, but it's made me have different morals and different outlooks and different ideas. And I think that that's sort of a gift in itself.
I completely understand where you're coming from. And, you know, with regards to pushing people away, I think, you know, for anybody that is losing their sight or going through anything traumatic, or, you know, whether, like you said, losing a loved one, whatever the case may be, you've got to really kind of remember that you're not the only person that is suffering in this, because I'm sure as my mother looked at me, I'm sure your mother looked at you and wished it was her that was experiencing the pain rather than you, because a mother would take that on for their child rather than watch their child suffer. So I think for me in the beginning, it was important to remember that other people were suffering as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, one of the main things that's actually helped me over the past few years has been going to things like support groups. You know, before this happened, I didn't really know anything about charity support groups, because I was very lucky as I grew up. I didn't have any illnesses or anything like that. But yeah, I am now still involved and have been involved with charities, like mainly actually ones to do with my burns, because they are more obvious to the outside world, and so it causes more problems with self-confidence and self-esteem for me at the moment. Places like Changing Faces and the Katie Piper Foundation, they've been fantastic, because I've actually got to meet other people who have been through that and been through a very, very similar experience. You know, no one's experience is the same, but a similar experience. And just being able to meet one other person to talk to and say, oh my goodness, that happened to me as well, and I felt like that. It's a huge deal. And as you say about, you know, mums and dads, for them, something that was so helpful for them was meeting other parents who have been through something similar. Obviously, as I say, no one goes through the same thing, but being able to talk to other people, let other people in, you know, it makes a humongous difference.
It certainly does. You know, I'm thinking back to, you know, a number of years ago, many, many years ago when I was in my 20s. And, you know, I had a nervous breakdown. And it just, something you said there reminded me of that episode, because I had to go to a crisis admission ward, and I was with a whole lot of other people that had breakdowns due to many different things that were going on in their lives. You know, there was a fireman there that just couldn't cope with, you know, pulling bodies out of buildings. There was a young girl that had been abused. There was so many different people. And actually, it made me feel kind of normal. If that, you know, whatever normal is, it just made me feel like I'm not the only person experiencing difficulty. And by sitting and sharing our stories, we might not have been through similar things, but we had felt similar feelings. And I think that was the whole point. We were able to share our feelings with each other. And that did help. It really helped.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, for example, it's like, you know, my family, we've all been through the same thing, as in for all from different perspectives. So, you know, I went through it from the perspective of it happened to me, and then I was the one having to have the operations. My mum, my dad, they were watching their little girl go through these operations and be in pain and couldn't do anything about it. My brother and my sister, they thought they were losing their sister, and then they didn't, and they had to deal with the change and things. But we all had similar feelings throughout, whether they were for different reasons, it doesn't really matter. It helped us to bond, and I've been very lucky that my family, it has made us bond and it's made us even closer. But definitely, like, I know what you mean about feeling air quotes normal, because, you know, what is normal, but it does sort of put into perspective, you know, reading things in the paper and meeting other people that have been through other things. It really does make you realize that you're not the only person in the world. You know, there's billions of people in the world, and everyone goes through their own tragedies, and it as big as you make it, I guess. So yeah, it really does help having people around you. That's what I have taken from sort of the past 3 to 4 years, that people around you, whether they're friends, whether they're medical professionals, in the majority of circumstances, they are there to help you. And simply, you know, saying a kind word can make a huge difference to someone's day and someone's life.
Oh, it really, really can. I mean, you know, life isn't always the way it's supposed to be. It doesn't always turn out the way you think it's going to turn out, but it's how you cope that makes the difference. And it's the people that are around you, your support network, and, you know, the way you deal with things that can really make the difference. And you had so much to cope with. I mean, it wasn't just the fact that, you know, your central vision had gone, you had 96% burns in your body, which is just unimaginable, but you had to learn to walk again. You know, you can't use your hands the way you used to be able to. You can't grip things, you can't see properly. So there's so many different things that you had to deal with at such a tender age, and you just are the most incredible woman. You really are, and you talk about your experiences. You are a motivational speaker. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, thank you very much. By the way, from working through charities and, you know, meeting all the other people, I've had the opportunity to sort of learn about what is out there for people to do, I guess. You know, before all this happened, I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. I didn't really have that much direction. I had grown up doing performing arts, you know, singing and dancing and acting. So I generally was quite confident before all of this happened. And I didn't really know if I wanted to go into that route. I didn't know if I wanted to go down another route. I just didn't know. And this happening to me kind of made me realize that there were other options available and things. So I went along to, you know, these days, and I got to meet people like Katy Piper, for example, who is another burn survivor, and she runs the Katy Piper Foundation. And she said to me one day, because I went and helped her with something that she was doing at an event, and she said, you know, you would be really good at being a motivational speaker, because I actually find it therapeutic, if anything, talking about what happened. And obviously, growing up doing drama and things, it gave me the confidence on stage. It means I can be quite well spoken, and I don't feel uncomfortable speaking in front of large audiences and things. So it kind of went hand in hand, which means, you know, that now I get to do something I really love. I love being on stage. I love entertaining, whether that is, you know, standing up dancing when I was 8 years old, or getting up and talking about how to, you know, keep going and how to stay motivated and how to overcome hurdles and adversity. And I'm getting to do it, you know, around the country, which is just, it's fantastic. You know, after everything I've been through, I have had a lot of time to sort of think about what I want to do. When you're a teenager, it's kind of like you hit 16 and it's, right, what do you want to do with your life? You have to do these qualifications to get into this university or whatever. And, you know, this happening has made me realize, well, actually, it's really not like that. You know, you can take your time. You can go to university at whatever point in life. You don't have to go to university anymore. You know, all of these options are available. And it's still something I would think about in the future. I was actually thinking of potentially in the future going to study physiotherapy now, after seeing such a huge difference that it made to my own life. And so that's something that I'm now thinking of doing in the next few years. And that is not something I would have even considered before this happened to me. So, yeah, I definitely say that what has happened to me has given me and opened me up to all of the options available. in life, and it's not just, you know, one set route that you have to stay on. There's a million different paths that you can take off a route that you think you're going to go up down, and it's what path you end up turning on, I guess, that leads you to the life that you end up with. And it's just that I had a blip in the road. That's all it is. But hopefully the destination will be fantastic.
Oh, listen, I'm sure it will be for you. Can I tell you something, Catherine? I was 19 and an air hostess, didn't want to go to university, just wanted to marry a rich pilot and drive about in his fancy car. And that was about as far as my ambitions went until I lost my sight. And never did I think that one day I would be working for a radio station, talking to incredible women like yourself,
and
sharing kind of inspiring stories. And I ended up going back to university at the age of 22. So it can be done, honestly, from air hostess to going back to university. If I can do it, absolutely anybody can do it. And I swear, Catherine, you will do it. You'll be absolutely incredible. You really will. I am so grateful to you coming on today and sharing your story with me. It really is remarkable. Catherine, if anybody wants to get in touch with you and maybe find out more about your motivational speaking, how can they do so?
So I have a website. It's www.catherinepugh, which is CatherinePugh.co.uk. It's a Welsh name, so people struggle to spell it sometimes. And then otherwise, it's my social medias, which again, it's just my name. And generally, I mean, a lot of my followers now simply follow just to see my progress, because people love a good news story. And, you know, what's happened to me is a good news story, because so many times things like this can go wrong and people can end up, you know, more hurt than I have. So if anyone wants to sort of get in touch, even just, you know, send a tweet. I love getting nice messages, and I'll always try and reply when I can if people are ever asking questions and things. Social media and my website is the way to go.
Absolutely. Well, I shall definitely be following you on Twitter a little bit later on today. Catherine, the very best of luck with your future. I hope you will keep in touch with us here at the radio station. Come on and tell us about your progress in the future. But for now, many thanks for joining us and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you so much. Lovely speaking to you.
Incredible story there. Part two of our interview with Catherine Pugh as we get started here on the Weekly Connect. Fascinating story that Catherine has, and quite an incredible woman despite what's happened to her. This is the Weekly Connect, and this is the place to get in touch. If you have something you would like to say, get it off your chest here. The Weekly Connect at rnib.org.uk. Your voice in your words. That's what it's all about. So you can send in your audio contributions that way, or you can just send us an email and we will get them read out for you here on The Weekly Connect.
RNIB Connect magazine is out once again, and it is new and improved. After feedback from the Connect community, the magazine is bigger and better, aiming to reach more people and deliver the most useful stories and news. RNIB Connect magazine is published by RNIB every 3 months for everyone affected by sight loss. Full of articles, tips and inspiration, Connect magazine is completely free and available in various formats including Braille, large print and audio CD. Join RNIB today to receive your free copy of Connect magazine. Visit www.rnib.org.uk/community/register or call 0303 1234 555.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
When you think about the different types of jobs that blind people can do, you might not think being a police officer would be one of them. During his childhood, Inspector Nick Rook struggled with dyslexia and received little help at school. So he turned to sport and joined a karate club when he was just 12 years old. He gained a black belt in just 4 years and won competitions both nationally and internationally. Nick then went on to become a qualified karate instructor, volunteering as a coach to students with all abilities, teaching the sport to individuals who were disabled or had experienced hardships in their life, as he wanted to give them the opportunity to fulfill their potential. By 1995, he had fulfilled his own life's dream of joining the police force in West Yorkshire.
Yes, that's right. I started as all police officers do, as a police constable. You do your 2 years probationary period, and then if you choose to, you can specialise. So I originally specialised in public order on the operational support unit. Then I moved over into the firearms support unit. So I was a PC, a sergeant and an inspector on the firearms support team, sometimes going back to district between promotions. But yeah, my real sort of passion and the real place where I specialised was firearms support, so the armed response vehicles.
It was clearly an enjoyable job for Nick.
It was absolutely brilliant. I mean, again, it would be great if we had a world where there wasn't a need for such capabilities. Mm. But I've got to admit, it was my memories and the experiences I've had within the organisation and being on the department are brilliant, something I'm really sort of passionate about, and a lot of training, a lot of qualifying to stay there. But yes, absolutely loved it.
But then, tragedy struck. 4 years ago, Nick suffered health complications which resulted in him losing nearly all of his sight in his right eye, and later, his left.
My sight went overnight, basically, in that having suffered an ulcer in my eye. But I still had my left eye, but at that point I'd been promoted to inspector and I'd taken up a position of commander in Bradford. So, like I said, sometimes within the police you get promoted, you go and back to a district and then you go back to your specialism. So I wasn't at that point doing the firearms side of stuff.
He says his condition is extremely painful and he has regular visits to the hospital for treatment. However, despite this, Nick was determined to hold on to his job at West Yorkshire Police.
I was very operational, so I was always out, even the roles, you know, that was my love, operational policing. And like I say, overnight, suddenly you sort of lose this. Again, I think what you can either do is you can either give up or think, no, do you know what? I'll look at this as opportunities, and it's an opportunity that perhaps I didn't want, but you've got to look on the positive side of stuff. So, again, working with my supervisors, my employers, I had a workplace assessment. I was supported by my supervisor. My current line manager has been so supportive. It's been a real learning experience for both of us. I've had to sort of learn how to use the specialist equipment. Again, very office-based now, and that's what it needs to be, because, again, but still, like I said, I stay at a meeting with RNIB in Leeds, so I still get out. I'm not sure in a room. It's just making those reasonable adjustments and the sensible adjustments, really. Like I say, it's happened both in my private lifestyle, can't drive anymore, and also in my professional approach to working.
Coping with losing your sight affects people in different ways. Nick says dealing with it has been a challenge for him at times.
Do you know, I mean, I would truthfully in saying that perhaps the hardest thing I've had to deal with is the mental side of things. And you know, the sight loss occurs, that happens. But like I say, it's the acceptance. You go over like a period of mourning where some days are harder than others. So, yeah, it's a real challenge it's been. But like I say, I think sometimes you've got to sort of, it's that fight or flight time, isn't it? And you can either give up or you can think, do you know what, I'm going to give this my absolute best shot and try and inspire other people to show that actually disability, it's not a life ending thing, and it's not always easy, you know, but it's lovely now to be in a position where I can inspire people. I wouldn't have this opportunity normally. So it's looking at the positives as best you can.
Inspector Nick Rook is now known to many as one of only a handful of registered sight-impaired officers in the UK. However, he admits that if he applied for the job he holds today, he might not be so lucky.
If I was going to join the police force today with the sight issues, there is a minimum sight requirement before you join the police force. So would I get in today as a police officer? No, I wouldn't. And you know, that's based around safety for myself, for the people I serve, for colleagues and stuff like that. But like I say, in the policing world, the great thing about it is that we've got the police officer route, but you've got the support staff route. So again, there's still those opportunities, and what I would say to anybody is give it a go. You know, don't write things off before you've actually knocked on that door, and just see if that door opens. And like I say, West Yorkshire Police have been so supportive in making the adjustments, sitting down, and you know, proper risk assessments and things like that. That, you know, it could have been very easy for me to think, do you know what, this is my time done in the police force, but no. So again. And that's not just around sight loss, that's around people with disabilities. You know, we live in a world now where there's so much assistive technology that can help people. And it's not just a case of sort of bumbling through either. You know, this is, I've been given opportunities, I've done things around the National Police Air Service that no one can say they've done, I've been on courses. So it's about not just sort of, oh, I'm, thanks very much, I'm here, and I'll just sort of sit in the corner and keep quiet. It's excelling, and still I've got ambitions of promotion.
Throughout his years at West Yorkshire Police, Inspector Rook has been involved in many major changes and significant moments in the force's history. He received a Chief Constable's commendation for Operation Rocky, which was one of the longest firearms operations conducted in West Yorkshire. He also generated income for the force by designing a gun box and was also pivotal in training. After losing most of the sight in his right eye, Inspector Rook was back on shift as soon as he could. He assisted with rebranding and setting up the first operations centre for the National Police Air Service. He also designed a new shift pattern which reduced sickness levels, as well as developing an easy task system as a replacement command and control system, saving the force thousands of pounds. In the past year, West Yorkshire Police have reaffirmed its commitment to recruit more police officers, and as part of this, the force is keen to receive applications from people from all different backgrounds and diverse groups to reflect a better representation of the communities they serve. Nick is now an executive member of the West Yorkshire Police Disability Association, which he is proud to be part of.
So that's something I'm really passionate about. So that's something I do in my own time with a real great amount of people. So again, that's about this development and positive approach to disability. In my professional career, I have still got real aspirations of going for promotion. I still want to be a real part of the organisational change. I'm doing some work at the moment around firearms licensing. Like I say, I designed and implemented the command hub for the National Police Air Service that serves the whole country. So again, and I also want to act as, you know, if I can inspire somebody, if there's someone out there today that listens to this, or somebody in school that's been told you'll never be anything, I hope they can look at me and think, do you know what, it's up to me and I can make that difference. And I'm not going to take no for an answer. If people are willing to work hard, and that's what I do. I just want to inspire people and give them the confidence to go out there and be as much as they can for themselves.
Find out more about Inspector Nick Rook. He's on Twitter with the following handle, @WYP_NickRook. That's Nick, N-I-C-K, R-O-O-K.
Join RNIB Connect and become part of a wider and stronger community led by blind and partially sighted people. Membership is free, and it's the best way to keep in touch with things that are of interest and help to you. You'll receive Connect magazine, our membership publication, in your chosen format, as well as having the chance to be amongst thousands of like-minded, blind and partially sighted people, friends, families and supporters. You'll also be able to take part in and organise social activities in your area, campaign for change and improve the lives of people with little or no sight, and get help from our dedicated RNIB Connect support team. It couldn't be easier to join RNIB Connect. Simply complete the online form at rnib.org.uk or join over the phone by calling 0303 1234 555.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Time now to find out what's been happening at the UK's leading sight loss charity, This week at RNIB, the current head of the charity says the sight loss organisation is facing a crucial time in its future. Interim Chief Executive Sally Harvey was responding to a series of questions posed by RNIB Connect radio listeners in a special interview broadcast last week on the station. The questions covered a range of different topics, ranging from employment rights and future campaigns to RNIB's box at the world-famous Royal Albert Hall in London. During the interview with Alan Russell, Sally Harvey admitted that RNIB has a special responsibility to do as much as they can for the people that depend on them most.
We need to ensure that we are using those opportunities wisely, standing up for the rights of blind and partially sighted people where it's appropriate, and actually working with other organisations where the needs of disabled people more generally are better served by us working together.
I suppose people may not be aware, Sally, about a lot of the campaigning work that RNIB does. They may know the sort of front public-facing services, but perhaps aren't aware of the campaigning work that goes on, particularly in the devolved governments and in Westminster around the UK. And you know, you are working with other charities when it comes to things like transport as well, but perhaps those don't really get the attention they deserve.
I think that's probably fair. I don't think RNIB talks as much as we should do about some of the things we do with blind and partially sighted people. So to just kind of give listeners a bit of a feel for that, clearly there's some things that happen nationally in the context of the UK. So there we will work to influence government in terms of changes to legislation, making sure actually in terms of the European stage, even that certainly currently anyway, and we'll perhaps avoid that topical subject, but in terms of current EU regulations and law, we will certainly make sure that the voice of blind and partially sighted people are heard. More locally, of course, Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales all have devolved responsibilities as nations, and therefore our campaigning work might look different there. But whether this is around shared space in the context of our environment, whether this is about benefits, whether this is about employment, whether it's about accessibility and audio description on television, wherever you are, pretty much, I think you'll find that RNIB has had a role in supporting blind and partially sighted people. I'm very, very proud of the campaigning work we do with blind and partially sighted people.
Employment opportunities are a real problem for people with little or no vision, despite RNIB's campaigning work and the ever-increasing power of technology as well. Sally says it's a problem that can be tackled, but attitudes have to change.
The unemployment levels amongst blind and partially sighted people is very high, and in fact it's getting worse, and that's something that I am very, very concerned about, and absolutely RNIB and others must play a part in improving that position. Only 25% of blind and partially sighted people of working age are currently in employment.
And you know, that perhaps can't just be dealt with by the stick approach and using legislation. Would you say there's room for the carrot approach there in dealing with employers direct, you know, changing their attitudes?
To be honest, Alan, I don't think there is any one solution that is the answer here. It is making sure that we're operating at all levels, working with government to make sure that their employment programmes are inclusive and meet the needs of blind and partially sighted people. It's promoting the ability, not the disability, of blind and partially sighted people in the workplace, and breaking down some of the fear factor for many employers. They won't have an understanding of what it means to employ someone with sight loss, and they're scared. So actually making sure we're supportive, that we challenge where appropriate, but just create opportunity and change mindset. That's going to be the thing that makes the biggest difference.
Meanwhile, as part of last Thursday's World Sight Day, RNIB Connect Radio spoke to Fazili Hadi from the charity. She says it's important for organisations concerned with sight loss to use special days in the yearly calendar to remind people in general that those without vision have a voice and aren't afraid to use it.
I think these days do draw attention to things, and I think for the sight loss community, a lot of sight loss organisations will draw attention to it in their own publicity. They'll use the day as an opportunity to launch new services or new ways of doing things. For example, RNIB will be launching a new service that's going live in west of Scotland and Northern Ireland called Need to Talk, which is about confidence building and counselling for people who have lost their sight. So we use it as an opportunity to draw attention to the issues of sight. We also in the UK have something called National Eye Health Week that you your listeners might remember from September,
mm-hmm.
where RNIB and Specsavers and really everyone in the sight loss world and eye health world drew attention to the fact that 50% of sight loss is avoidable. You know, if people get the right treatment early, or if they wear the right glasses, or they get their cataract operations done in time. We also drew attention to the fact that 250 people a day in the UK begin to lose their sight. So these days are important. They just allow us all to get together and make a louder noise.
And she says it's important to be realistic about the effects of vision loss and not to shy away from it.
I think it's really important, though, that we acknowledge as blind and partially sighted people the ups and downs of living with sight loss. And again, I hope your listeners have come across How I See films and audio, which really enable blind and partially sighted people to tell their own stories. And I gain a lot of inspiration through listening to other people's stories and their good and bad experiences. And we'll be launching another series of How I See films next week. So I think peer support is sometimes as important or more important than maybe some of the latest gizmos.
RNIB are following up on the success of last year's How I See video with a brand new video being launched this week. The new film, which you can view on YouTube from today, hears from people living with sight loss about their experiences and how they see. Annalise Danella from RNIB, who is visually impaired herself, explains how the film came about.
Imagine you're up on the top deck of a double-decker bus. The windows are all misted and condensed and you can't see through. You go and you wipe just a tiny little patch from the middle to get some clear vision, but all the rest is misted over, and that's how I see.
If somebody told me that they were wearing an orange coat, I would be able to identify that, but I wouldn't be able to identify the person.
I won't see it until it hits me.
It's tricky because in an ideal world, we would have been able to sort of simulate partial sight. So, you know, we would have actually been able to kind of show how people see through their eyes. But that's a very difficult thing to get right. And actually, we decided that having the participants describe it using words would also be really effective, and it would let the viewers sort of actually sort of use their imaginations a bit more to really get the picture. So in the film, Rachel Stevens says, for example, she has retinitis pigmentosa, which is what I have. She describes it as sort of looking through a fogged up glass. And that's just a really, really useful, quick way of expressing visually how she sees. So yeah, we decided to have people describing their vision. We thought that was really important.
People always said, well, he's not blind. I've asked when the next train is to Cambridge, for example, and they've said to me, why don't you look up there? And you know, you're not asking because you're stupid.
My eyesight tends to vary depending on all sorts of different factors. It can be time of day, it can be to do with how tired I am, how much light.
I think the only thing that I felt really strongly about was that I didn't want it to be a complaining film. I just wanted it to be a film that deepened people's understanding of partial sight, and a film that was, you know, succinct. All the participants have a really upbeat attitude, and they're not sort of basically having a go at the public for not understanding them. They're just explaining themselves a little bit better. So I mean, I think it's very easy to get quite frustrated when people are ignorant about partial sight, but in some ways it's not their fault that they're ignorant, and the best thing we can do as partially sighted people is to try and be as patient as possible and explain it as best as we can rather than get annoyed. I felt very, very strongly that really, you know, we all have loads of anecdotes we can share, but we wanted to really focus on those anecdotes that best illustrated what partial sight means. So like an example of an anecdote like that is that I have a 2-year-old son and a 6-year-old daughter, and when I take my 6-year-old to school, I have my son in his buggy, and when I'm pushing the buggy, I don't use my white cane because I haven't yet found a way to use a cane and a buggy at the same time. But when I don't use the buggy, I do use my white cane, and so the lollipop man, who we pass every day to school, got a real surprise when he saw me with my white cane, because he's like, I see you every day. You're not blind. You know, it was quite a confronting situation, but I as soon as I explained it to him, he understood it completely, and he was quite apologetic, and he's really, really understanding and lovely to me now. And it's just quite a good illustration of how, you know, in a way, it's tricky for people to be able to understand how you can push a child in a buggy and yet also need a white cane. So it's just all about finding the best most visual ways of explaining and expressing that without necessarily having a go at the public for not understanding.
I need my cane to get on the train. I can't see, I'll bump into people. But the minute I sit down, I have got enough vision to read a book or read the newspaper or look at my phone.
I think it's very simple and very effective, and it does exactly what we wanted it to do, which was really try and give someone who might not understand partial sight a basic but slightly deeper than they would otherwise have knowledge of, you know, this is what partial sight looks like, this is what it feels like, these are some examples of you know, situations we get into, and, you know, we're all perfectly fine, but, you know, we need you to understand us. And if you want to know more, then here are the links to find out more. So, you know, it's a basic introduction, and it's got a nice tone to it. I'm very pleased with it. I think it's done a really good job.
Please share our film, #HowIsee.
And if you want to watch and share the video online, check out How I See on YouTube and share using the #HowIsee. And that's this week at RNIB.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Now, every so often we like to learn about different sight loss societies around the UK. It's what we call, rather unimaginatively, our Society of the Week. Now, this week we feature a society in the north of England called Galloway's.
The building that we're in was the Morecambe Visitor, so that's a local newspaper. Galloway's has knocked down the majority of the building, but we've kept the front of it because it's a protected heritage site, and it's all glass fronted and it looks lovely. So the cafe is called Broomy Sunshine, and it's a nice open environment. The building has been made as a centre of excellence for visually impaired people, but obviously for the general public to use as a community asset as well. So we've tried to do things to make sure that it's accessible for all, but including sight loss. So the floor, it's a lovely wooden floor, like a laminate floor, but it contrasts with the colours of the chairs. Also, I don't know if you noticed that, but on that back wall there, there's a plasma screen where we put all the events going on at Galloway's. It's got tactile braille marks on it, and it says welcome to Galloway's in braille. To the left, as you walk into the coffee shop, it's called the Bradbury Ideas Store, and it's open to everyone to come in, but the Ideas Store, we can demonstrate all the equipment. So it's easy to access via public transport, and it's a lot more prominent in the city centre as well of Morecambe. So you'll have people coming in and having a wander and just curious, really. Also, I think because we're linked to the coffee shop, it does break down that barriers. Don't feel like you're going to what used to be called a blind centre. You don't feel like you're going anywhere special. You go into a coffee shop for a brew and a cake, and it just so happens that we're here if you have any inquiries. So it makes it less daunting, I think, for all ages. So it is a community asset. So we have encouraged all groups in the community to use it as much as possible because it's so accessible for everyone. You know, it's all on one level, so wheelchair access, and it's all bright and open, so it's great. So the Stroke Association use it once a month, the Alzheimer's Society use it. We have a lot of groups in the community that have been self-formed as well. So there's one that's called Social Ease that meet here every Tuesday, and it's for people with anxiety who don't want to go to anywhere new and daunting, and they just want to come for a brew and just chat. They meet up here as well, so it's a lovely buzz about it when there's all these different groups using the space as it was intended, so it's really good. I think it is like a kind of a new way of working, isn't it? Because it does break down so many boundaries. We used to be separated a lot, you know, visually impaired people in that sector, and everything used to be separated. Whereas now the communities and the organisations are working so well together. So in the back of our building, we've got a big space where organisations could use that for free, and it means that our service users can access it as well. So I think that new way of working, not being precious, inviting as many different groups in as possible.
Saunders, and I'm a volunteer and service user. I have macular degeneration. I went originally to Balmoral Road, which was where Galloway's was before, and I actually went originally because I needed a talking watch, and that was my introduction. And then I became part of the Documenting the Move team that met and talked about what we needed in the new Galloway's hub in Morecambe. You know why it's called Broomy Sunshine? because it's Morecambe, and just across on the promenade we have the statue of Eric Morecambe, and bring me sunshine. So somebody came up with the idea that we wanted somewhere where we could have a brew, so it's Brew Me Sunshine. It is central in Morecambe. It's very easy to get to, and people come in from the community as well, and they come in and they look around. They see people with visual impairment, so they see it's quite normal. And also we have this wonderful idea store where people can come and see all these things for independent living. And they might not be visually impaired themselves, but they come in and they have a little look around and they think, oh, now this could probably help Auntie Vi or the neighbour next door or somebody that they know who's struggling with a visual impairment. And it works.
Galloway's took the decision to purchase the building and was talking about the development of the building. We had a focus group made of service users who are visually impaired, and they were instrumental in the design of the building, so what colours they wanted with the rounded tables, ensuring that there was enough room for guide dogs. Even the coffee shop, we were talking before about afternoon tea, how, you know, it's a nightmare if you can't see too good, if everything's on tiers. So if everything's all on one level, all on one plate, it's just great because it means that you can't knock over any tiers, get clotted cream everywhere. We've all been there. And also in gaining momentum from the community and telling the community what's going on and what Galloway's is really and what we intend the building to be used for. So they're really, really important for all that. Galloway's aspiration to the cafe is to continue to be used as a community asset, continue to reach more people living with sight loss.
Well, this is where the Documenting the Move group of, I think there were about 8 to 10 of us, visually impaired people with various degrees of visual impairment. And we met and discussed with members of the Galloway staff, and we actually had a very good meeting down at Penwitham with the design team. Because, of course, they know all about design, but they didn't know about the difficulties of visual impairment. And so we made suggestions to them. For example, did you notice in Brew Me Sunshine that there's lots of room to move around the tables? And that's important for people with visual impairment. And also you'll notice with the elderly people that tend to come in from the community, there's plenty of space for wheelchairs and for walkers with shoppers on, quite a lot of elderly people come in with those. And people who are disabled in other ways as well as sight, there's plenty of room. And in fact, even sometimes you'll see young women with pushchairs. And I spoke to one day, I was having lunch, and she joined me with a toddler in a pushchair. And she said she comes in here because although she used to like Costa Coffee, you can't get a pushchair in Costa Coffee, whereas there's plenty of room here. So it's user-friendly for all the community, very much to feel part of it all, included. Because so often with these kind of things, it's imposed from above. But this wasn't imposed from above, this was consulting the users.
My name's Ashley and I work here at the coffee shop, and it's usually very, very busy. We've got a lot of regulars now, and everybody that comes really, really says how much they enjoy the space. It's quiet, it's peaceful, it's very light and airy. And I think it's just been used really, really well. We've got a lot more people coming in all the time. Sorry? It's a lovely place to work. I love working here. It's relaxed, it's friendly, and yeah, it's nice. I enjoy it. It's just a good, nice place to work.
My name's Jonathan Thompson. The volunteering role that I do is in the ideas store, joined on to the cafe, and it's just mainly that if someone was to come in, we just make sure that they're okay. And so it's meet and greet, really. I have congenital cataract in both eyes, and I have no 3D vision and no depth perception. So if, for example, I'm in a room without a lot of space, then I can quite easily walk into furniture because my eyes don't tell me how far it is away from me. And the other side of that is sometimes I can in a cafe like this, I can stand 20 feet away from a table and not know that I'm stood that far away. I think dropping places like this are important because, personally, for me, it's nice to know that there's somewhere I can come if I need advice on my eyesight issues, and it's a good place to relax as well.
To be honest, I didn't think there would be anything I could do with the visual impairment that I had, but I was encouraged that yes, I could do the idea store, and certainly now I've got to know where everything is and so on. As a user of some of these aids for independent living, I found that I can be quite helpful with people who come in, and we don't handle money. As volunteers, we don't handle money. We have to get a member of staff to do that. But we can talk to people, empathise with them, and show them what wonderful things there are there for them to use. And then you also get people come in and they look a bit lost. And it's their first time in. There's this horrible thing that the hospital says, I can't do anything more for you. And you're not passed on to anybody to help. They come in here and immediately we suggest that they have a word with Nia. And Nia's fantastic personality. And they go in the little consulting room over there with Nia, looking a bit apprehensive and down. And they come out with a great big beaming smile, knowing that there's lots out there to help them.
And if you'd like to share your Society of the Week, then please do get in touch. Perhaps it's a society that's personal to you, that's maybe helped you out through difficult times, or perhaps you have loads of fun with your local society. Well, whatever it is, tell us about it here at The Weekly Connect. You can email theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Coming up next, are restaurants with a very big difference coming up.
Join me, Alan Russell, and my guests on the Early Edition. We'll take a look at your morning newspapers and bring you the top headlines, the biggest sports stories, and the best in showbiz. We've got interviews on everything from audio description.
I was very flattered the other day. A lady said to me, are you describing the full Monty? And I said, yes, I am. And she said, oh, my day just got better. I have a reputation, apparently, for describing pert buttocks.
Breaking down barriers.
Islamic law says that you are allowed to have a guide dog in the law of Islam. Having a guide dog and seeing it as a tool, Islam does make way. It's very, very flexible.
And personal stories that will inspire and shock.
I yelled at him to get out of his vehicle, shook his head no, and then put his hands back on the steering wheel, and then he let his foot off the brake. So I raised my M4 rifle, and I fired two rounds in front of his vehicle, and then boom, his whole car and himself disintegrated, sending shrapnel into both of my eyes, blinding me the rest of my life.
So why not join me, Alan Russell, and my guests weekdays from 7 a.m.
The Early Edition on RNIB Connect Radio. The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Now, finally, this week, for most people, it's impossible to imagine what going blind can be like. But there's a restaurant in London that gives its diners that exact experience. Our sighted producer, Leanne Coyle, and her husband, Jeremy, tried out Don Le Noir for a night out with a big difference.
Well, it's tucked just off of a really busy street in London. We turn the corner and there it is, Don Le Noir. Looks like a normal restaurant. It's completely dark inside. Can't see anything through the windows. Guess that's to be expected. Let's see what lies within.
Hi,
pleased to meet you. I'm Leanne.
Michael, nice to meet you, Leanne.
So you're Michael.
Yes,
I'll be. Are you managing the restaurant tonight?
Yeah.
Michael Resnick is the deputy general manager at Don Le Noir.
So we are not just a restaurant, we are more than that. So we provide to our customers a unique sensorial and social experience where they are going to eat in the pitch dark, and all their senses will be challenged, and they will have the opportunity to taste without be able to see the actual food. So it's a completely new experience, and that's why people are coming here, because they want something unusual, something unique, and we are the only place in London to do that. All right, so Gao, you're ready?
Yeah.
So Gao is going to take care of you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Gaurisan Ratnaraja, known as Gao, was our waiter.
Mm-hmm. Right hand on right shoulder.
So I'm totally blind, registered blind myself. I got a congenital glaucoma. I'm originally from Sri Lanka. Basically, I started working here about 10 years ago. And I'm a guide stroke waiter, basically guiding sighted or non-sighted or disabled people inside the dark room, serving the food, explaining what's going to happen inside the dark room. Reverse service, blind people serving the sighted people, basically. After second set of curtains, we're going to turn left to that dining area, passing the last sets of curtains.
Now back to the dark room, where Gao, who is totally blind, expertly guided us to our table.
Stairs, don't lose anybody. Passing second set of curtains, turning left, passing the last sets of curtains, no stairs.
As someone who's worked with blind people for many years, it was a little strange to be on the other side for the first time.
Feel the chair and sit down, please.
Yeah, I can feel it. Back.
Let go of your mic.
Gao, in his reassuring manner, went on to describe what was in front of us, and when it came to serving drinks, he used simple but effective measures to help us find glasses.
Who should I give the bottle of wine to?
Oh, well, we'll share it, but you could lean it towards me, please, Gao.
Yeah.
But despite this, Jeremy and I managed to get a little confused.
I've got wine and hand corks out.
Okay, so now I need to find... What do I need to find now?
Did you get a second glass given to you?
This type of thing happened again and again throughout the evening, whether it was accidentally putting my hand in my dinner or elbowing the woman next to me. Luckily, she was fine about it. Let's hear from Deputy General Manager Michael Resnick again.
With eyes.
It seems chaotic because everything which is in the dark may seem chaotic at first, but surprisingly you realise that you get used to it. And that's where sometimes you when you see customers coming in, there is some kind of apprehension, they are a bit scared. And most of the time, they get used to it. And when they come out, they are very surprised. Even sometimes it's maybe a bit therapeutical. Like they are facing their fears as well, for some of them. It's a very strong concept. Everybody has his own fear and apprehension. And that's a very good way to have a nice time and to deal with this as well.
I'm going to reach out to feel where your face is so I can put the recorder close to it. Tell me what you're thinking.
Very disconcerting. You're sort of wondering what's around you, what's going on. This is intriguing.
Strangely, I thought I might feel a bit freaked out about the fact that it's pitch black, like there's nothing.
Do you think that's because of the music? Take the music out, have silence. It would be quite eerie, wouldn't it?
Oh, really?
Madam, it's a green start. There's a big brown bowl coming in front of you.
Okay. Oh, it smells good.
Coming to the other side.
Okay.
Ladies first.
Wow, what does it smell like?
And this is when we really began to surrender to the darkness and let our other senses take over.
So you go first, you take a forkful and describe what you're eating.
Funnily enough, what I really want to do is just get my fork and stab about the plate, like get a feel for the shape of the plate.
Yeah, it's a big bowl, isn't it?
Oh, so it is a big bowl, it's quite a big starter. So I'm basically stabbing the plate randomly.
Is that my bowl?
No, it's my bowl. And I'm hoping there's something on the fork. I'm going to put it in my mouth.
Jamie.
Oh,
Oh, wow.
Cheese.
Yes.
I think I've mixed the butter with my salad.
Oh, no.
A myriad of funny incidents, clatters around the room, whips of laughter kept everyone on their toes and filled the room with a real buzz, a unique element of Don Le Noir that Gao says can spill over sometimes.
I guess you...
having such an unusual job, it must lend itself to some funny things, funny and bizarre things happening.
It's always on the weekends, always happen, yeah. If it's a big group or some couple, naughty couples have happened, yeah.
Sorry, did you say naughty?
Yeah. Not all the time, every few months they happen inside.
Wow, that often. Okay, well, I promise me and my husband will be good tonight. And behaved ourselves, we did. As did the couples who came to join our table a little
later.
You've
got Leanne and Jeremy on this side.
Hi!
Hi!
Now, I have to say, it's not the norm to start chatting to strangers in restaurants, but as Gao explains, the dark room brings out all sorts of unusual behaviours in people.
Some of the people get claustrophobic, they won't go out. Some people, they cry. And some people, they won't go outside. Some people collapse and so on. 99% people enjoy, actually. Go inside, panic. They said they can't see anything. After 10, 15 minutes, they're laughing away, talking to other customers. Like a social experience. They share the table with other customers or group and so on. It's like a network in the dark, basically.
A network in the dark. I'll drink to that. If only I could find it.
Are you ready for your mains, Leanne and Jeremy?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
The food continued to arrive. The mains, then the desserts. It all tasted great, and we tried to guess what we were eating. But it wasn't until the end that we were handed the menu.
So it's the big reveal.
So our starter was lemongrass, orange and lime, poached fennel, black quinoa, apple, wood smoked pumpkin, ghost cheese crumbs.
It was so interesting to finally find out what we'd had for dinner. There were photographs displayed on the menu too, a real feast for the eyes. I couldn't help but think the chef's effort to make the dishes aesthetically pleasing was a trifle ironic.
Lasagna, I thought it was lasagna, yeah.
But all in all, we had fun. I won't dare to say that my experience at Don Le Noir has helped me understand what it's like to be blind. Of course it hasn't. But it did give me a crash course in eating without sight.
Oh, with wild garlic foam and spring flowers. I didn't taste any...
Thank you to Jeremy and Leanne there for going along, our sighted producer and husband, checking out Don Le Noir for us. What an experience that was. That is it for our show this week. Thank you so much for getting in touch, as you always do. The Weekly Connect at rnib.org.uk is the place to go to email your thoughts and suggestions. If you have a story that you would like to feature on this programme, then that is the way to send it in to us. Also, if you would like to be sitting across from me, virtually or otherwise, to tell us all about your life of sight loss as part of our new guest series here, then do email in. That is it for our show this week. Thank you again. And remember, when it's Mondays from 1, it's the Weekly Connect. Goodbye.